Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Bald Move Pulp production. This is going to be the kickoff for the annual badass season on Bald Move. What is badass season? I'm so glad you asked. We're going to get talking about that in a minute. But we're introducing this through the lens of the 1995 action movie Commando, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is, for me and Jim's money, the epitome of badass. This is directed by Mark Lester, who directed Firestarter, the Stephen King adaptation, and Armed and Dangerous, kind of a silly, spoofy John Candy vehicle. It is written by Stephen D'Souza. Is it D'Souza or D'Souza? I don't think I've ever heard that pronounced.
I call him Souza, but
he is a prolific writer. He did Die Hard, 48 Hours, Judge Dredd. He executive produced the first season of Knight Rider. He's done a lot of stuff in the 80s and 90s. As I mentioned, it stars the Austrian Oak, Arnold Schwarzenegger, 3C Bald Move certified badass. Also, Ray Don Chong is his opposite. She's been seen in The Color Purple and Soul Man. She's the daughter of Chong, Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong fame, which I did not know until I did the research on this podcast. Also stars Alyssa Milano as Arnold's daughter. Of course, you've seen her in Who's the Boss, Melrose Place, and Charmed. Dan Hedaya from The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, Joe versus the Volcano. I know he can get the job, but can he do the job? And the movie Clueless. Also, Vernon Wells from The Road Warrior. He's the Wes or maybe Wheeze. I can't remember. And with the Australian accent, I can see it going either way. Mm-hmm. Bill Duke, super badass from The Predator, probably the only one that kind of holds his own against Arnold in this movie. And then Bill Paxton, rounding up the rogues gallery. This will be the third time he works with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
After True Lies and Terminator. Jim, before we get talking about this movie, I want to talk about the badass system. This is something that we came up with in the infancy of Bald Move. I think it was the third or fourth episode of Blue Yonder, the very first podcast you and I ever recorded, some, I don't know, getting to be 15 years ago. And we both love 1980s and early 90s action movies. And we kind of had debates about who was the best one. And we devised this system of the three C's to categorize and properly rank these mountains that are men. Do you want to talk about the three C's? What are the three C's, Jim?
First up, the most easy to identify, I think, is champion, which is a stand-in for how beefy are these guys? You know, do they look like people that you are intimidated approaching? Or if they were coming after you, you'd be scared for your life. And I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is again like a very high rating on that. He's a one, which is as high as you can get in champion. He got full marks there.
It's a scale from zero to one, all three of these, so
in 0.25 increments, I think. And the second C is charisma, and that's, you know, how charming are they, and it necessarily doesn't have to be charming either. It could be intimidating, it could be like just how well, I guess, do they play their part in the movie?
And their ability to mentally and emotionally dominate a foe, like intimidate, you know, charm, get their way, you know?
Sure, absolutely. And then the third C is character. And that just means, like, are they playing a badass in this? Is this person, like, a Green Beret? Is this person ex-military? Is this person... We used to have a rating of, are they on the cover of the movie with a gun? And that backfired on us. And so I think we're going to do away with that. But basically, like, is the character that they're inhabiting meant to be badass? And Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a hell of a lot of badasses.
So we last year we blew off the dust because we did a couple badass podcasts back in the Blue Yonder days. We blew off the dust of the badass concept. We did a curated 4-film walk through the badass archives. We did Predator, one of the all-time badass films of all time. Mm-hmm. We did Cobra for Sly Stallone. We did Bloodsport for Van Damme.
Yep.
And then we finished up
Under Siege.
What was Under Siege
with Steven Seagal?
And we went in depth and talked about the guys. We're gonna run back two of these guys, Arnold and Sly Stallone, this year. We're gonna do Over the Top for Sly. which is a little bit different of a badass film.
Totally.
And then we got some surprises for who we're gonna bring shine a badass spotlight on. This is a whole week celebration. Our working Wednesdays are going to be taken over by the badasses. We've got some ideas this first stream they're going to do on Wednesday on twitch.tv/baldmove starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. Jim and I, we've got now a spreadsheet that ranks near 100 badasses, and we're adding new ones all the time. It's not enough just to make the list now. We want to start really recognizing the all-time greats. We're going to devise a badass Hall of Fame, a Mount Rushmore, perhaps, of badasses on this first stream. So if you want to nominate new badasses for the year, join us for the debates, help us design our Hall of Fame / Mount Rushmore, join us for this week's stream on twitch.tv/baldmove. But again, we're here to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1985's Commando.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
This is, I don't know if it's the epitome of 80s badass action films, but it's definitely one of the foundational building blocks. Mm-hmm. What makes Commando great?
Can I say before I describe why it's great, that watching this movie was an absolute joy. I love this movie so much. This might, in fact, be my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. I know Predator is amazing.
You're not saying best.
Nope. I think Predator is damn near a perfect action movie. I don't know that you could even do better if you tried. This movie has flaws, but the way that this movie is flawed is perfect. I love every single flaw and facet of this movie. And I think that's what makes it great. It has flaws. It's cheesy. It's corny in a lot of places. And you can laugh at some of its villains. You can... I mean, the one-liners are... They're so frequent that it becomes its own joke. It's like a meta one-liner when you hear, okay, Arnold's opening his mouth. I know it's a one-liner. What's it going to be this time? It's just so badass. It's the nth degree of what this thing is.
This was what drew Arnold, because I did a lot of research into this, and what drew Arnold this film, it's the first film that he's playing a quote unquote normal guy, because before this he was a murderous robot. He was a barbarian, barely could speak, you know, he's just running around wearing a loincloth. And he's like, I'm not some maniac. I'm not some crazy person. I'm a father with a daughter.
Come on.
And what's
man.
Really funny is if you watch the scenes where he's being a normal person, he fails so hard at being a normal person. It's like the episode of Data where he's trying to learn how to dance and Crusher says, just smile. And he has the grimmest, most inhuman smile possible.
Yep.
The whole first 10 minutes of this movie where he's just being a normal dad with his daughter, Alyssa Milano, is some of the creepiest Uncanny Valley shit. Now,
yeah. And what about this character is normal? I mean, okay, yes, right. He's in the moment, he's just a dad who's living out in the wilderness with his daughter and having fun. But his life before this is anything but normal. He's ex-military who has been on a secret team to overthrow the government of another country.
Right.
That's the setup for this, is he used to do that stuff. And now he's just a normal dude, I guess. But come on.
He's like a CIA detachment of Navy SEAL type of thing. And he was the biggest, baddest of all. And he's out of that. He doesn't do it anymore. I don't know what happened to the mom, but he's a single dad raising his daughter up in the mountains. Somewhere close to Mount Baldy, apparently. But he plays a real weirdo. What's funny is because, like, I think Arnold will eventually relax into kind of, because I think he's a naturally charismatic guy. Mm-hmm. And if you see behind the scene footage of, like, in these days where he hadn't quite gotten enough experience to have all that shine through, he still got it, but it's just super raw. And maybe more suited to an emotionless cyborg or an insane barbarian, because that crazy energy kind of comes through. And I just, it's like when I'm watching him almost drown Alyssa Milano in this pool, you know, right before, you know, and there's just this montage of him doing dad stuff. Like, she's putting an ice cream cone in his gigantic face. He's like, ah, and he's their petting wild deer.
Yeah.
Yeah, just normal dad stuff. But after this is one of the most efficient movies known to man. So they have 5-minute montage to set up the fact that he's a normal dude. His old boss from the military comes in and says, some shit's about to go down, John. You better watch your ass, because everybody in your unit's been going dead the last week or two. As soon as the helicopters fade from him leaving, shit hits the fan. They steal his daughter, and he has 11 hours to get her back before bad shit happens. And it's about this intense 12-hour period where he goes and essentially kills everyone involved that's even thought about kidnapping his daughter.
Yeah.
And it's this infancy of badasses where everybody, you know, no one, they didn't have military advisors. They didn't send the stars away to a 6-week boot camp, so they understand how to work the weaponry. It's just a big dude with oiled muscles, with big guns, and he's just waving them in random direction. And then the B camera unit's going to film 16 dudes exploding. And like the climax of this film.
Yeah.
Yo, go ahead.
I was going to say the body count in this movie is truly off the charts. I'm not sure I can name a movie with a higher body count other than massive disaster movies like 2012 or something.
I saw that there's 105 people killed in this film, and Arnold accounts for like 96 of them.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So we talked last year when we did the Badass Fest, and I'll, like, if you want to look at our previous Badass podcast, we'll link these in the show notes. But we talk about in the Predator scene, there's this glorious scene where they're all trying to shoot at this invisible thing, and they're just pouring lead down range. They got Jesse, the body. He's got Bill Duke at that point. He's got the minigun out. Arnold's got his big machine gun. Everybody just comes in. They're launching grenades, and they're doing this for they're just mowing the jungle for 2 minutes. Arnold at the end of this movie does that scene except for with living men, and it lasts for 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I was going to say the body count is all in that one scene pretty much.
Yeah.
He kills a couple other dudes maybe, but
maybe a dozen people, but then he gets up and it's just the kill odometer just starts zap Branniganing very, very quickly.
And he does, you can see in those scenes a lot of what's going to be iconic from Predator 2, right? It's
yeah,
there are a lot of like, this is a test run for some of the particular shots in Predator, like him holding a chain fed minigun and just firing mm-hmm. into the woods one armed. Mm-hmm. That's in this movie. Like he's doing that, like you said, but with people, and it's almost like I remember that from Predator and I'm thinking, God, that's one of the baddest things from Predator, but it's actually in this movie a couple of years earlier.
Yeah, you can definitely see the DNA. Like, this has got one of the all-time iconic arming scenes, like a dude just putting yeah. shit on and just like weapons and knives and bullets and clips and magazines and grenades and magazines into guns and, you know.
It's all close-ups like, and quick montage shots, yeah.
Yeah.
The classic gearing up montage.
The other thing is, like, I've shown, this is a lot like Predator, where I've shown many, many people, men, women, all ages of kids, and people love it because they get the idea that this is like very tongue in cheek. It's not, it's almost like a slapstick comedy, except for instead of like banana peels and crotch shots, it's just grenades and bullets tearing holes through people. You're not supposed to take it serious. Like, this is all grim serial killer shit if you don't have a sense of humor about it. And Arnold is helpfully sure. there to give these like just grim one-liners uh-huh. at a rate just a notch below the amount of bullets coming out of his gun. The other thing that works really well is his co-star. Ray Don yes. Chong has got a lot of really good chemistry, and it avoids the pitfalls of a lot of similar eras where this late, it's very National Treasure, and that you have an unwilling captive that uh-huh. kind of slowly is won over to the side of the protagonist. She makes smart decisions throughout. Mm-hmm. She is a valuable contributor to the plot. She saves Arnold's bacon on at least one, maybe two occasions. Yep. And they don't fuck.
Yeah, right.
They don't try to muck it up with like, oh, she's actually hot for him and he's actually hot. Although, did you know that they actually did film a sex scene and they... It was described as unconvincing.
Unconvincing. Oh boy.
So it was not used.
Yeah. Yeah. What does an unconvincing sex scene look like? Oh boy. I can see it now.
I can close my eyes and I can see it, to be honest. Like, you know, imagine Conan taking one of his pleasure women and just put Miss Chong there. I don't know the right kind of, I can't think of any sex scene with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
That no. Of any kind. Like the closest thing you come is not Spy Hard. What is the True Lies with Jamie mm-hmm. Lee Curtis, and it's not a sex scene and Jamie Lee Curtis is doing 100% of the heavy lifting.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, it's probably better that they didn't include it. I for some reason want to say there was another end to this movie as well.
Might be.
Where there's a 5-minute longer director's cut, but I could be wrong.
Floating around that I found out in my research that I wish I'd actually seen instead of this, because I've seen this movie like 50 times at least.
Yeah. So Apple TV had that version of it. I didn't rent that because it's like a minute 40 of extra footage, and it's all just like completely insubstantial stuff. They're not adding to the story. It's just like, oh, when this guy gets hit in the crotch with an axe, you get to see him react to it for 2 seconds longer.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So
there are tons of flaws in this film. Maybe we should, because I know there's probably, this is an older film. Maybe some of our younger whippersnappers haven't actually gotten the pleasure of watching Commando. It's only 90 minutes long. I really encourage people to mm-hmm. check it out. It's going to enhance your enjoyment of this podcast. Although on the other hand, I can't think of anything that we'd say that would spoil the experience for you.
Right.
But in case you want to just pause now and get all the crazy balls to the walls, action films, one of the most all-time crazy bloody action films of all time, you want to go into it fresh eyes. The premise is, I'd pretty much said, you've got a dad who is a former special forces guy. One of his victims of the special forces, a South American president, they had this country, Valverde, that there was kind of the stand-in for Colombia, Nicaragua, stuff like, you know, where we were doing kind mm-hmm. of dirty shit to. He was a deposed dictator, and he wants revenge, and he's killing all the men in Matrix. This is John Matrix, is Arnold Schwarzenegger's name. All the men in his unit, And they show up, try to kill him, are unable to do so. They kidnap his daughter, and then he's got 11 hours to get her back. While he's supposed to be on a plane going to Valverde to murder the current president to reimpose the dictator, he's got that 11-hour air gap where he can save his daughter before they find out and kill her. And that's all the setup you need for this movie. He is aided and abetted by a flight stewardess, the previously mentioned Miss Chong, who joins his efforts and helps him out throughout the movie. Check it out. I want to talk about the fact that this movie succeeds as a badass action film with almost zero opposition. The opposition force are the most motley, ragtag, ragamuffin, poorly dressed, out of shape dudes that's ever been assembled. If you made this movie today, you would have a team of burly fucking stuntmen and women that are flipping around, and they got their arms. These guys are just, they're all, except for maybe Sully, they're all big dudes, but they look like they've lifted more six packs than barbells in recent history.
Oh yeah.
Epitomized by Vernon Wells playing Bennett, Matrix's arch nemesis. Will you describe this guy in the film? And then I want to talk about what I think went wrong.
Here's the thing. When they first introduce Bennett, there's a whole twist around that. But Bennett doesn't seem like a guy who I would laugh at on the surface. But once they do the twist and you realize Bennett is still alive, suddenly they have him in, I think it's a black undershirt with a mesh, like almost chainmail tank top.
Except for it's more of like a net, like a fishing net.
Yeah.
Made out of yarn.
I mean, and that's the thing that I didn't understand. Is he a fisherman? Is he actually a fisherman? Because when he starts the movie, he's on a fishing boat and they blow him up, right?
Right, right. You're faking. Because he's the second in command of Matrix unit, and they got him, everyone's getting killed, and it'd so be a glaring omission if he wasn't. Yeah, they fake his death.
But I think he might have come back from, you know, overthrowing this country and become a fisherman, because yes, he has a fishing motif going on with his dress, but it does him no favors. Like, it shows off too much of what I can only call like a stack of flapjacks body. It's not impressive, right? He's
dad bodding before dad bods were cool. Yeah.
And then you put the dad bod next to Mr. Universe, literally. And it's no contest. It's laughable to make him the major villain.
Yeah, this is Arnold at like his physical peak. He is like in the prime of his life. He's got zero body fat. He's got massive arms, a tiny waist, giant thighs. Like he is. There's a shot of him in a bikini towards the end of this film. And he's like just like an anatomical map. And then you got this guy with like man boobs and skinny arms in a fishnet vest. Mm-hmm. And he is the one who's going to protect this dictator from Matrix when he comes for his inevitable revenge. What went wrong? I did a lot of research, and I actually think I understand all the things that went wrong. Because the thing is like someone pointed out that this guy is Wes or Wheeze in Road Warrior, and he's pretty terrifying. He's a big dude.
Sure.
He doesn't have giant muscles, but he's got pretty good definition, and he's big and he's lanky and he's got a lot of energy.
It's crazy.
This, he seems tubby and flabby and slow, and he's got a weird affect. They hired someone else to be Bennett, and they got like 2 days in the filming, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. I don't know if there was, I heard a couple things that the guy, there's this word unconvincing, looked unconvincing, opposing Arnold Schwarzenegger, and there was maybe some attitude problems. So literally at the very last minute, they call up Vernon Wells, and he was clearly three cases into a beer session.
Yeah.
And they're like, come out here and be this bad guy. They had no time to redo the wardrobe. He's wearing clothes that are like two sizes too small for him.
Oh, no.
He hasn't cut weight or lifted in a while.
Yeah.
And the script called for the idea of Bennett to be in love with Matrix, like in a sexual way.
Oh, I didn't pick that up at all.
Well, I think now that I, when knowing that context and watching the film, I definitely think that Vernon Wells is doing an unfortunate kind of campy, swishy, gay performance. Huh. Like his idea of a guy who would be in love with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it fucking doesn't work. It just does. It makes him, it like that combined with the doughy body, the ill-fitting clothes. He decided to cut his hair because I guess he had long kind of a mullet hair. He decided to shave his head to make him look meaner, but it just makes him look like he's got a bad Great Clips buzz job that he's let grow out for 6 weeks. And the mustache, he yeah. described, he said he was trying to go for Freddie Mercury on steroids. And I think he nails
sound
it.
Scary. Yeah, but it doesn't
I think
sound
he
scary.
Nails it. But it does. No, it's not a guy that is going to stand up against this guy who eats green berets for breakfast.
The only way in which he measures up to Arnold Schwarzenegger is height. I feel like that's not a tall
order either.
Yes,
they are identical height.
Yeah.
And he's wearing lifts, so it looks like he's a couple inches bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure. But in every other way, I can't take this man seriously. And it becomes hilarious near the end of the movie to a point where, like, Bennett is trying to force Arnold Schwarzenegger's head into an oven, and I'm like, or into a boiler. And I'm like, you're not going to get there, man. Just give up. You're trying to force Mr. Universe to physically do something he doesn't want to do. It's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. No, his arms are as big around as your head. I just don't understand. Cause like, it's in for like, okay, your costume, which is again, a fishnet made out of yarn and a black tank top and some commando pants and boots, mm-hmm. doesn't fit this guy. Go out to the fucking real life Army Navy surplus store that you film at and just get him some off the rack fatigues.
Yeah.
And have him be like an ex-soldier looking that maybe have gone to seed. You don't have to put him in a sleeveless outfit, mm-hmm. that shows off the fact that his arms have no definition and are, mm-hmm. a third of the size of Arnold. There's like just a lot of unforced errors in, and the thing is Bennett's the top. He is the ultimate badass that Arnold has to get over to win this movie. It goes to shit on down from there.
Well, you got Sully. No, I think they made a huge mistake by not making Bill Duke that guy.
Dude, if that's Bill Duke that I forgot because Bill Duke, and that's the best fight in the film.
Easily.
Bill Duke looks mean. He's got the affect. I don't know what is, but like in Predator, like they put him in full fatigue. So he looks like a big imposing dude. I don't know what his cut up situation is. Yeah, they should have just made him Bennett. Bennett could have been the guy in the kind of campy scene where they're filming a porno in the hotel room. Yeah. But like, okay, so Bill Duke, he is not embarrassing himself. Everybody else, like... Yeah. That dude that Sully. Gets on the plane with him.
Oh, yeah. Bohemian Rhapsody is what I'm going to call him.
He looks like the cameraman from UHF that's eating like a hoagie all the time. This guy has got like, he's a big black guy. And so he's like 6'4". He's bigger than Arnold. And that's where the good stuff ends because he's like 3/4 of the way to bald. But he's got long, like, I don't know, like a fryer tuck that he's grown out for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. He's wearing an ice cream suit that barely fits him in a Hawaiian shirt, a straw hat.
Yep.
He looks like he's 59. It's just not good. They got Sully, who is about 5'3". Yeah. And you and I have long maintained that they only cast this guy so that Arnold Schwarzenegger could grab him by one ankle and hold him over a cliff.
Oh, it's glorious.
And they're just like, and then everybody else is just like literal who. Like when you get to the end of the movie, he's just mowing down wave after wave of fatigued paramilitary goons, and they're fine. Mm-hmm. But all of like the spotlight fight scenes in this film, as good as this movie is, it would be a whole other level if every one of those guys looked like they could conceivably beat up Arnold Schwarzenegger in some kind of universe.
But that changes the tone of the movie. So one of the things I love about this movie is the tone of it. And that's where some of the camp comes in. When you have laughable villains who I don't believe could stand up to a light breeze, let alone Arnold Schwarzenegger, that adds to the campiness of it. And to me, that is what makes this movie. If you were to put serious actors into the roles of Sully and Bennett, I don't think this movie is as good. I don't think it's as enjoyable anyway.
One of the things I think works regardless is the stunts in this movie are incredible.
Yes.
And not just, I want to talk about, because we can talk about the Arnold stuff here in a minute, but like in the introductory scene where Bill Duke, for whatever reason, decides to steal a Cadillac and draw massive attention to their operation for no good reason. Mm-hmm. There's a stuntman that like is driven through a plate glass window by a Cadillac in the camera. It's really happening. There's no green screen or compositing. There is like so many dudes getting blown up and shot. Just in the background kind of stuff. It all looks really well coordinated and real. And even the guys that are like that fight with Bill Duke in the hotel room is a standout. They're knocking each other through walls and shit. The fight with Bennett, even though it kind of sucks, it's got some kind of epic moments where he's like really taking it to Arnold with that big pipe. And of course, you know, letting off steam. Yeah, and I guess this is a good segue into the good stuff. The shit that they have Arnold do, like half of the set pieces are like, look at this big dude lifting an entire tree by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's within the first minute or first couple of minutes of this movie. Arnold's carrying this long ass tree trunk. I can't tell if it's real. I believe Arnold could carry a tree trunk this big.
Oh, absolutely. That size. Yeah.
He's moving like this thing is heavy, regardless of whether it's a real tree trunk or not. It's got some substantial weight to it. You could tell just his footsteps are very heavy. And it's super impressive. He's got it over one shoulder. So he's all flexed
as he's holding a chainsaw rippling. Bigger than I am with the other arm.
He just uses that as counterbalance, right? It's not even a matter of weight at that point.
Right. He's always like, I could do two trees, but I also got to get the chainsaw. And
yeah, no, it's fantastic.
You mentioned, my heart broke a little bit doing research in this because I found out that, Arnold Schwarzenegger can bench something like 500 pounds. And he was confident that he could lift an actual phone booth, but they were unsure of what it would look like on camera. So they built one out of balsa wood.
Oh, man, because that's my favorite feat of strength in the entire movie is when he pulls a phone booth with a man inside off the ground and body slams it.
Yeah,
it's incredible. That's my favorite stunt in the entire film.
Same. And the fact that it's like balsa wood. The other thing is that the director seems like an insane man. This Mark Lester wanted Arnold to dangle Sully over the cliff. Mm-hmm. And Arnold's like, are you fucking crazy? Absolutely not. We got to rig that. And if you notice, like it's you can't really see it except for like a couple frames at the very beginning of the scene. You can see the steel cable that's around the guy's ankle that Arnold is going to like dangle over the cliff. Because like the first 59 or 49 times I watched this film, I took it as a matter of childhood faith. Cause I've been watching this film since I was, 85, since I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I took it as a matter of faith that he really carried a tree. Yep. He really ripped a phone booth out of the ground with a dude in it, that he really dangled a full grown dude one handed over a cliff, that he actually flipped a Porsche over to drive it, that he actually ripped. He actually ripped seats out of a Mazda Miata or whatever the hell Cindy's driving.
All of these stunts, I believe he could do. It's not like he can't do these things. It's more like for safety reasons, they won't let him do these things.
Yeah, it's an insurance thing. You know, he is like, because he also made $2 million for this film. This was like one of his first big paydays. Mm-hmm. He was a star that they were trying to protect. Also, he did a lot of his stunts and he went to the emergency room 3 different times. Ooh. With different cuts and contusions that he got. Because you can tell, like, he climbs a 3-story building just by climbing up its drain pipe. He does a lot of his own stunts in this film. It's just, man, I'm still a little bit disappointed that that's not a real phone booth.
Sure. You know, on the topic of stunts, and, you know, Arnold doesn't do all of his own stunts in this movie. They probably won't let him. There's a pretty incredible stunt in this movie that kind of blows my mind. And I don't know, you know, what movie magic they made this happen with. But that scene where Arnold tears the balloon down. It's in the mall. I love this whole mall scene, but where he tears the balloon off the ceiling or whatever, and then swings down and lands on top of a moving elevator. The stuntman who does that, I am super impressed with him, because that is a real stunt. I don't know if he swings all the way from the second story or third story or whatever, but he definitely swings onto a moving elevator, times it perfectly, and lands without problem. And I was just blown away by how impressive that stunt was.
There's some other stuff. Like, there's this really interesting downhill chase where Arnold's trying to catch, like, these guys are going, like, Arnold lives up in the mountains, and there's this long switchbacky road that goes, you know, to the next highway. So the bad guys, the bad guys think they're gotten away from Arnold because they disabled his Ford Explorer, whatever the hell this SUV is. Mm-hmm. And there's a shot of him like looking under the hood, and he gets the distributor cap, and it's just wire spaghetti. He's disgusted. So he pops emergency brake and pushes it downhill and jumps into it. And you can see the bad guys with horror realizing, like, we have to traverse this whole mountain. He's just coming straight down at us. And whatever stuntman they had piloting that thing earned his fucking keep that day, because it is out of control. It is taking hard hits.
Several cuts where I'm like, well, that thing just flipped over after they cut the camera.
Yeah, the second they stopped filming, this thing just biffed, and that guy just went ass over tea kettle. But it looks really fucking cool, and I don't think I've ever seen anything just like that, where it's like, I'm going to take the straight line, and I'm going to have like six opportunities to ram you off the road. Like, oh, you dodged me this time, but guess what? You're going to have to make another turn. I'm not losing any speed, and I'm coming straight at you.
Yeah, and it lasts forever, too. It's like a 2-minute sequence of him going straight down this mountain at them. It's fantastic.
Yeah. One of my other things is I love, like, they chart this guy's progress through the movie. He's got his old general. I think he's a 2-star general. And he's following Matrix throughout the movie, and like they keep on asking his for reaction, like, and he keeps on saying things like, "You're gonna need a lot of body bags," or "You might as well expect World War III." It's like it's just ever escalating things, story of blood and carnage that Arnold is carving through this film.
It's very much like Rambo in that way, right? You know, the first one, First Blood.
Did you know that I guess Arnold and Sly really hated each other at this point of their careers, because they were essentially competing for the same roles and the same kind of marketplace. Sure. And the studios leaned into this, that line where he's fighting with Bill Duke and he says, "I'm a green beret." He's like, "I eat green berets for breakfast." That's a direct dig at Rambo, because Rambo is a green beret.
Yeah.
So like they're beefing. They're beefing in the films, Jim. I love it.
Trying to think if there's any more stunt stuff to talk about.
We talked about some of the casual feats of strength. The things I think that Arnold can do in about anything in this film. But there's one point where they're breaking into, I think it's either a car impound lot or maybe it's the Army Navy surplus store. He grabs this like 1/2-inch steel chain with a beefy padlock and just yanks it, and it comes apart. Like, no fucking way. Maybe the Terminator version of him could do that. That's the only one that I'm like, okay, there's no possible way. I thought all the work, like him escaping from the airplane, was really cool. Like, he uses, there's this elevator and this double-decker airplane that he rides down to the cargo bay. He's just like ripping apart the canvas walls that divide all the cargo containers, and he's smashing his way into the landing gear, and then he essentially does a swan dive from like 50 feet in the air into this swamp.
Yeah. Saved by the tall grass.
I loved him actually making that, because like, it's essentially, he just kind of sits down. He sits down from 3 feet altitude in this swamp, and then he just starts just wading through a man on a mission.
Yeah, I don't know what takeoff speed is for one of those types of planes, but it's probably pretty high.
Yeah. I tell you one thing that is fucking goofy, and I noticed this like 2 or 3 watches ago, and it keeps on getting goofy. The scene where he's in his little black bikini briefs, and he's rowing this extremely short rubber dinghy.
Mm-hmm.
it's very clear to me that Arnold has no idea what he's doing. Like, he's trying to do a backstroke, but that, like, there is no keel on this boat, so it's going to want to, like, spin 180, 360, like, and he is struggling to make it look like he is making headway in this little... He's essentially got an inner tube with giant oars. Uh-huh. And he's trying to get this to go in a consistent straight direction, and it's just not happening. And they cut like 17 different times from her being on the boat and him making about 17 feet from it. And it's now my favorite thing to watch for is the fact that he's just, yeah, man, you should have a kayak or something, because it's just not happening with this rubber boat.
I'm convinced that shot is only there to show off his back muscles. Rippling as he
it does
rows,
a good job, right? It does a good, yeah, rowing. It does, it definitely shows off the anatomy lesson that is his back for sure.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed about that scene is when he gets to shore and he jumps out to pull the boat up onto shore, that's either a stuntman or it was filmed a different day. I'm pretty sure it's a stuntman. I don't know why he used a stuntman for that, but they did. Because the guy who pulls the boat onto shore in the wide shot is wearing like light gray bikini briefs or Speedo or whatever. And then they cut to Arnold doing the same thing. And he's in black, jet black pants.
Yeah. How hard is it to find black bikini briefs?
Right.
In Hollywood.
I wonder if it's the same boat that he's in though. So it can't really be stock footage, but yeah, they must have filmed it a different day or something.
Yeah. I don't get that. I want to talk about the soundtrack.
Oh, God.
This is the most badass soundtrack ever recorded that features a steel drum.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
even better than Bloodsports.
Oh, right. Bloodsports had... What the fuck is with the steel drum soundtrack? Because it's like, when I think of steel drum, I think of relaxing in a Caribbean beach with like a red stripe in my hand and like a coconut daiquiri in the other. I'm not thinking like death and mayhem, but
they're hardest to get there with this. Like, there's so much going on in the soundtrack. I think it's
complex,
bad, right?
Yeah.
It's the 80s. Yeah. So we've got to have synths. So they start off with synths and then they add in a smooth jazz saxophone for part of it,
some kind of woodwind,
and then they straight up woodwind, they got the flutes in the mix and the oboes and shit, and then jangling metal is all I can describe it as in the background. The whole time it's just going like, with this jangly metal sound, and then you're right, the steel drums are going. It's cacophonous. I don't even know what's happening in this soundtrack.
And it's not, you can't hum it. It's not like a tone.
No.
It's just like this wall of sound that is underpinning everything to Arnold. Anytime Arnold does something badass, this giant wall of cacophony starts up. It's not bad. It's not like, it's not jarring tonally. Because it is sounding kind of vaguely menacing or something like that. But I'm like, man, that's another easy upgrade to this film. If you had like the Terminator soundtrack, this would be a better. But you're right. Like, the more I think about it, some of these flaws are not really flaws. Because if you did parts of the movie better, it would make the things that are shitty really stand out in stark relief. Whereas this is all just kind of like at a slapstick, not to be taken serious level, that just kind of works together.
Right?
I do wish guys were better, though.
Yeah. I mean, I could see it. I do love the bad guys in this, but they could have gotten better ones. Here's the thing. I think if you take any element of this movie and put it into a movie like Predator, it makes Predator a bad movie.
Yeah.
And yet, in this movie, it makes the movie better. You know?
Yeah.
There's some magic that's happening here where all the elements are coming together to create something beautiful, even though individually they're not that great.
I also like
James Horner did the music for this. I want to talk about that. He has done tons of great scores and tons of great compositions. And I wonder what happened here. Was he just early in his career and exploring and hadn't figured out what his style was? And so he's trying everything together at once.
Maybe that's what they want because
Rathacon,
amazing soundtrack.
Right.
I'm looking at some of his stuff. He did Commando. Oh, so he did Aliens, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Red Heat, which I quite enjoy. Field of Dreams. That's just his work in the 80s. He did The Rocketeer. I like that soundtrack. Searching for like all kinds of different stuff. Clear and Present Danger. Braveheart. Apollo 13. Jumanji.
Titanic, I think.
He did Titanic. Yeah. A lot to the Zorro films. The Perfect Storm. Beautiful Mind. He's...
Right?
But this is... I don't know if it's like in the beginning of his career, because again, he crushed it on Star Trek 2.
Sure.
So maybe the director, because this director does seem like a little bit of a goofball. Like he's the guy that's got Bennett like in love with Matrix, which is
right.
That would have been an interesting way to do it. It's just like you have this beefy man's man from the 80s trying to do a guy who's kind of closeted gay, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it would be better if he had just not tried to affect anything at all and let the subtext carry it. Because there is like this obsession. Like Bennett's like talks about Matrix like he's 12 year old best friend. You know, John, Matrix can do this, Matrix can do this, Matrix would laugh at your men and we'd laugh together as we killed them, we'd laugh and laugh. And like it's obviously intense and like a hero worship that's been perverted for some reason, because he got I forget what his petty grievance against Matrix is, but yeah. Like yeah,
they don't, I don't do a great job of describing why he's angry at Matrix. I think the idea is Matrix got all the credit for overthrowing this government. And I don't know how anybody really got any credit per se for doing that.
Because
I thought it was a shadow operation. But
Right.
I guess somehow Matrix got the credit and he was pissed because he has a vendetta against him.
Yeah, and there's also a little bit about like Bennett is a true psycho, like he murders for the pleasure of murdering,
right,
and right. That's something that they kind of like butted heads over.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the character of Cindy, because that sounds like some of this is accidental, because it turns out they tried to do a sex scene, they tried to do this, they tried to do that. She is not your average damsel in distress. Like she's a stewardess, and she's attractive. But like she plays everything so smart in the beginning of this movie. Like Arnold kidnaps her, takes her to a mall and gives her this sob story about his daughter being kidnapped. And he's like, I need you to go and do something for me. The very first moment that she gets away from this guy, she immediately goes and tells the authorities, there's this, some crazy dude that's trying to, he's kidnapped me. Like she tries to turn him into the cops. I forget exactly what point in the movie she kind of starts feeling sympathetic, or she buys the fact that this guy's getting railroaded and decides to help him. And once she does, like it turns out she's like she's got ambitions, she's trying to earn her pilot's license, which comes in super handy in the film. She single-handedly saves Arnold when he gets arrested by the cops, like they're taking him down in a paddy wagon. She takes the fucking missile launcher and you know, she's got a which way faces front problem.
Sure.
But she gets
who
solved.
Who among us wouldn't?
You know, I was actually looking at it. It kind of makes sense. If you thought that was a conventional gun, why the hell would you put the long end behind you?
Right.
Like you'd hold it like a gun and fire it. Of course, the missile comes out backwards, blows up a store behind her. She gets it turned around. And she's like when you look at you compare her role to like Cobra last year. Yeah. Who is that? Wasn't Kelly LeBrock. It was Igor. Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah.
You look at that thankless role and you compare it to what Cindy's doing here. It's like it's damn near modern. It's damn near modern female protagonist level in a 1985 meathead movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And the times where she does freak out, you know, and have breakdowns really works, because like,
yeah,
she's in an insane situation. She's seeing crazy shit.
Sure.
And she's just expressing how fucked up all this is. And he's not reacting at all. Right. It's like,
yeah. He's like for most of the movie, unless he's with his daughter, he's kind of like in a Terminator affect, you know, even when he's cracking jokes and stuff. It's like it's this weird, unemotional thing he's got going on here.
Yeah. But after all this happens, she explains, like, we just went through this mall where like the security guards tried to kill you. You lifted a phone booth and body slammed it with a dude in it. You swung down from the third story, landed on an elevator. She describes exactly how batshit what just happened was. And she says, are you going to tell me what's going on or what? And his response is no.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
it. Yeah, yeah. That's it. And he continues driving. It's really hilarious.
The only thing that kind of bothers me is, so in one scene before Bill Duke gets to the hotel room, Arnold has killed Sully, mm-hmm. but they're trying to make Bill think that Sully is still alive. And apparently Sully is like, you know, they set him up in this movie to be kind of a sleazy guy. And Arnold grabs Cindy and he grabs her blouse and he rips it open to where it shows off some of her cleavage. And he's like, essentially pretend to be a call girl. Cause mm-hmm. Bill Duke will think this is just normal Sullivan behavior. I'm going to hide behind this door. She doesn't really look like what they call a hooker, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's
even in that situation, it's like, okay, but throughout the rest of the movie, people say she looks like a hooker. Like the cops are says like, oh, look at this hooker, but right. But I'm like, What about this lady driving this drop top Cadillac in a nice kind of like business skirt and blouse? And then she's got nice hair and makeup. Why did it's like, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's because she rolls up next to him and like makes eyes or something. Like she's trying to, you know, set up a
oh, that they job just assume.
Here,
I gotcha. Pretty bold to proposition the guys driving the paddy wagon,
right?
You know,
like they have time for a quickie.
Are you guys cops? You have to tell me. You have to tell me if you are. You
I mean, know. Is look, that a cops real aren't uniform? Above, aren't above it. At least the cops I've been watching lately. We own the city.
Yeah.
But they don't have time. They're transporting a prisoner, lady. You know this.
I want to talk about the ending, but I also got something random.
Oh, I have a lot
along
of
the lines
stuff.
Of the hooker stuff. Mm-hmm. Why, when Bill Duke and Arnold are fighting in this hotel room, and they are just Bill Duke is firing this hand cannon that seems like it's deafening, and this goes on for like 2 minutes, and then at one point Arnold grabs him and throws him through the wall into the adjoining suite,
mm-hmm.
and there is a naked couple. This girl has like the biggest, firmest fake tits I've ever seen, and there's a camera tripod. Yes, they are. There's a tripod set up and there's a camcorder going. They're filming a porno. I don't know if it's amateur or professional.
Mm-hmm.
Are they deaf? Did they not hear the gunfire and these two giant dudes throwing themselves through and against and onto the ceiling, onto the floors? And they're just so caught up in the act that they can't. Yeah. Someone can't say cut. We need to figure out what the hell's going on here. There's bullets coming through.
Are they not recording the audio? Because surely this is disturbing. Like, if there was violent shit going on outside this room that I'm recording the podcast in, I would have to stop because it would ruin my podcast.
Well, yeah, imagine if you're watching porn and you're just like, right. You know, enjoying it and suddenly gunfire erupts in the back. Like, I'd be concerned. You know, I was like, I don't know if I can finish this. I'm worried about this lady and this dude.
This is going to be the best porn ever shot. I have so much to say about this porn scene.
Oh, can you imagine?
Yeah, you imagine you're watching a porno and these two people are fucking on the hotel room, pretty standard stuff, right? And then all of a sudden, two ex-military dudes bust through the wall and start fighting each other in the middle of a porno.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Sex and violence, baby. It's peanut butter and chocolate.
Also, this is a weird scenario all around. So. And I think they're making jokes about it. So when Matrix kicks Cook, who's Bill Duke, through the door to the hotel room, they're definitely filming a porno. And the woman is behind the man. Like, they're under the covers, right? So the woman is behind the man, I think fucking him in the ass. And then when...
Oh, that's subversive for a mid-80s film.
Right? And then when they come in, they're fighting and they take a break to stop. And look at each other. Bill Duke says, fuck you, asshole. Arnold Schwarzenegger replies with, fuck you, asshole. Is that a reference to her fucking him with the strap on?
Oh, my God. I know what I'm going to be watching for my 51st watch through of this film. Because
watch for
that's
it. I swear it's
the
there.
Gym theory. I got to check it out.
Yes.
Also, there's a point where Arnold grabs Bill Duke by his nuts. lifts him up in the air and throws him by his junk. Throws him through a wall by his junk. That might be one of the worst ways to get thrown through a wall I've ever seen. It's insane. It's insane.
Oh, yeah. And I love that whole set, right? They've got the glass block wall, which is designed for them to punch through and throw each other through. And so crumble. That stuff's really good. That whole scene is excellent. That's a great fight.
It's the best fight in the film.
Yeah, for sure.
Which makes me think Bill Duke should have been Bennett for sure.
It's the best hand to hand fight. I mean, you can't beat the gun mowing scene at the very end. But
Yeah.
Hand to hand, this takes the cake.
Let's talk about that final scene. The final scene of the movie is about 18 minutes long, and Arnold has finally put it all together. Because that's the other thing. There's detective work where he's tracking these goons down. He's trying to figure out where he took their daughter. He's finally found the location where this Presidente Arias is. By the way, this President Arias is kind of funny. He is playing a South American dictator. He is a Syrian Jew from New York. That's Dan Hedaya, but he is a South American dictator. They've tracked him down to his compound, and Arnold assaults it by the beach. He's just got a duffel bag full of boom boom and his beef. And hey, where was I going with this?
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
And then he starts off the assault by like planting explosives under barracks or whatever, and then he draws some fire, and then there's like this massive explosion. Like, I don't know how much fucking C4 Arnold brought. Like, maybe the whole boat was made out of C4. That that's how he had so much problem pilot. He blows that up, and then just all for the next 5 minutes, it's just him literally with this belt-fed machine gun waving at people the way you would, like, wave a garden hose at children that you're trying to cool down in your backyard. You know, like, they're running away. He's just waving it, and then the camera's showing him waving this gun, and then the camera reverses and shows, like, 15 dudes, bullet holes blowing out all over them, and then falling down onto the ground.
Yeah.
And it just goes on for fucking ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an excellent fight. I love the explosions at the beginning. They're way bigger than they should be, which is perfect.
They're filmed for like six different film angles, so they do that 80s thing where they just keep showing it from a different angle, the same fucking explosion. Yeah, they got their money's worth.
Totally. And the body count, yeah, it's fantastic. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, this is where he's doing the belt-fed machine gun with one arm. Classic Predator move he's going to use 2 years later. Good stuff.
So he then runs out of ammo. He takes a grenade up his ass, gets blown to safety. A very early example being blown to safety. He's wounded, and he retreats to this garden shack. About 15 guys surround it with automatic weapons, and they just hose this thing down. Like, they're pressure washing a building that's covered in mold and something. They're trying to blow it down to resurface it. Mm-hmm. One intrepid guy comes to go check on it, opens the door, and Arnold comes flying out with a pitchfork. Pitchforks this guy in the chest. He goes down. He takes two, like, I don't know, 7.5-inch circular saw blades. Blades one guy, like, just takes the top of a skull off, which is kind of amazing. Hits the other guy in the throat. Those guys are down. Now he's got like a sickle and an axe, and he's going to work just chopping these guys down. He kills like another three or four of these guys with his bladed weapons. Then one of them drops, of course, a belt-fed machine gun, and the carnage starts up all over again.
Yeah.
This leads to the worst fight in the movie, which is Presidente Arias versus Matrix. This is, they shouldn't even have done it, right? They should have had Arias try to beg for his life, try to buy his way out of it, and Arnold just kills him.
Right. It's a little game of, you know, cat and mouse, a little like duck and cover and chase the guy through, and it's okay. It's just not believable because I don't think this dude has any experience with this stuff. So,
yeah. And like, Matrix has been killing hundreds of his guys, and he's got like one rifle, and it's not great. It doesn't last that long.
He shotguns him out of through his French door balcony, off the balcony into the plants two stories below. Pretty good death. But this leads to maybe the only thing I find unbelievable about this movie in a way that's like not fun. After he kills this guy, he still doesn't know where his daughter is, right? And well, okay, so there's two things here. A, Matrix failed. Matrix fucked this mission up, and his daughter's killed unless she finds a way out of that room, which she did, right? He got there too late. She should be dead. Second, she's wandering around the facility while Bennett's chasing her, trying to kill her, and she's calling out, "Daddy!" And he hears this, like, she's in the fucking boiler room. Like, it is so loud down there, you couldn't hear yourself think, let alone hear someone call daddy from two floors up.
And it's Arnold, just, for the last 20 minutes, has heard nothing but 140 decibel gunfire and explosions. That's the other thing.
The only thing he's hearing is,
But somehow Alyssa Milano's daddy cuts through.
Right.
With his dad powers.
Maybe it was a spiritual daddy.
By the way, I forgot, they keep on cutting to Alyssa Milano throughout the whole movie, trying to like try different ways out. And they do, like, in part of the montage, their daddy daughter montage, is him teaching her judo. And like, he's like training her to be a warrior princess, I think. So some of this plays out a little bit better. She eventually figures out to bust out. You're right. If she was some normal daughter that he hadn't taught judo and search and rescue evasion, she would have been dead.
Yeah.
The scenes of Bennett tailing her through the mansion with the knife out is some of the most ridiculous. Again, I think this is him trying to be a little swishy. But he just looks like a fat dude with a knife that doesn't know how to use it, doesn't know, like, he's going to trip and stab himself.
Yeah.
And the other thing about, I hate every bit, the first part of the Matrix fight versus Bennett, mm-hmm. where they're circling each other with the knife, and Bennett's doing this thing with his fingers. It's the dumbest thing. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. He's got his knife in one hand. He's got the other one out. Just like, he's just twiddling his fingers. Like it's going to like throw Matrix off.
I think he might be trying to hypnotize John Matrix and not to like giving up the fight, but into literally aging. There's one point where he's staring down Arnold Schwarzenegger. He says, "You're getting old, John, you're getting old." And I'm like, are you trying to age him? By saying this, like,
because he looks like he's got, you look like you got 10 years and 50 pounds of the wrong type on him, dude.
Right. You're telling that to a man, you're standing across from Mr. Universe trying to taunt him about how broken down his body is. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, like, Arnold's taunting of him, like, this guy's acting job. When Arnold's, because he's got him dead to rights with a gun, he's going to kill him, and he's like, "Come on, Bennett, you want to get in close to the knife? You want to see the light when the lights go out, don't you?" This guy's react like the way he's trying to do this, like psychosexual pleasure that he's feeling from the idea of killing, like overcoming his fear, and like he kind of feels like he's afraid
a bit,
like it. He's got the affect of like he's called out the biggest dude in school, and there's a ring of kids around them saying, "Yeah, do it, pussy, fight him." And he wants to back down, but he can't. Mm-hmm. But there's no one in the room but him, Matrix, and Alyssa Milano.
Yeah, he could kill her and then run off.
Yeah, it's wild with that and the finger shit. Now, once the knives go away and they get done struggling over the fire door, I actually think there's some like really. Like he gets some good shots in him with that metal pipe and that like really look like they connect. And I'm starting to like really get into it. I mean, then the fight's over because Arnold goes on like this one-sided punching, like every way you can punch a guy, he punches a guy in like this quick cut montage.
Yeah. And then I love how that starts because, you know, Bennett's still taunting him. He's like, "I'm going to shoot you between the eyes and then I'm going to shoot you between the balls." Yeah. And Arnold's response to that is to literally say bullshit and get up and punch him 17 times in rapid succession.
Yeah. And then he's got him. He's after all that, he's still got him dead to rights with the gun, and he's caught. He's racking around the chamber. Arnold looks to his right, sees this steam pipe that's still attached, and he grabs it and he rips this 10-foot section of like 4-inch pipe off the wall and throws it at Bennett, who's standing in front of this big, I don't know, boiler reactor thing. Mm-hmm. And it penetrates all the way through Bennett's body, through his chest, through his sternum, through his heart, through his backbone, through the I don't know how many inches thick steel, and then proceeds to let steam out the other end. And Arnold says, of course, "Hey, Bennett, let off some steam." And it's pretty great. It's one of it's one of Arnold's greatest one-liners.
Bennett takes a lot of abuse. I say like he's not in good shape, but he could take a lot of abuse because you kind of glossed over the boiler door fight, part of the fight. I mean, that boiler door was closed and it comes right off of the boiler, and you know he uses it to hit Arnold, and then Arnold picks up his shield. Right, it's got to be 800 degrees or something, and they don't react at all. And then Arnold uses it to smash Bennett into the electrical works of this facility, and he electrocutes for like 30 seconds.
Oh my god, I forgot the routine that he does, and he comes out of that even more crazy. Like it's like Godzilla struck with lightning, and now he's coming out turbocharged against Matrix.
He's breathing fire. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, atomic fire. He's gonna breathe.
That fight is excellent, and I love the conclusion. I love how happy Alyssa Milano looks that her father gruesomely murdered this man.
Yep,
it's fantastic.
Yep, she's like all smiles, and then then the general comes and he's like, "All right, Matrix, we're gonna have to get your old gang back together." And I'm like, "Well, wait a second, he has no gang; they're all dead." You established that in the first 5 minutes, you idiot. But he does like half hearted, and Arnold just keeps on turning him down. Like Alyssa Milano's looking at like, "Are you going to join the army again, Dad?" And he's like, "No chance." And he grabs her, puts it on his arm, takes off with her and Cindy. And then they drive off in a seaplane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To I don't know. They have kind of a rocking 80s action anthem at the end.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they lost the drums and just used an instrumental version of that throughout the film, because it's trying to be a Eye of the Tiger a little bit.
It's called like We Kill for Love or something. I can't remember the exact name.
The lyrics are bizarre. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's got that. You know, rising up. I like it. It's wasted at the end of this movie.
Sure. And I like that they never made a sequel to this movie, because that would undermine John Matrix as a character, right? Like, he says, I'm never coming back to this ever again. And he makes his daughter make a promise.
I do think, before The Rock gets too old, can we not remake The Commando?
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Because make it a good, like, unironically good. Just fix mm-hmm. all, make him, have them all the bad guys be top notch. Keep all the insane stunts and the physical feats of strength. The daughter daddy relationship, all that's fine. Just have better music, better costuming, and better bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be a great companion piece, because you've got like the campy original 80s version, and then you've got the like modern John Wick sensibility, you know, man monster The Rock version. I think that would be a great companion piece. It'd be there's room to remake Commando into a modern classic without taking away anything from the original.
Mm-hmm.
What else we have to talk about?
I've got a bunch of random stuff that I noticed in this movie that really needs to be talked about, because it's bizarre.
Hit me.
First of all, I don't know if Always Sunny got this from this movie, but John Matrix can literally smell crime. At the beginning of this movie, he gets ambushed at his house,
right,
and he's talking to one of his dudes who's there to protect him and his daughter, and he says, like, remember, you're downwind, and this guy's like, you think I could smell him coming? Come on, what? And Matrix says, I did.
Yeah.
Like, he literally smelled the ambush.
You can smell the gun oil and the cheap cologne.
Then I don't know what's happening at this house. There is some weird shit going on. So Matrix is, you know, he got ambushed. He's trying to fight off these bad guys. He climbs up the roof to his daughter's room, because she kind of lives on the second story or third story here.
Yeah, some kind of dormer type sitch.
She's got a balcony situation, or like a deck, a rooftop deck situation that has no handrails, nothing. It's just a flat surface that she can go out onto. She's got a door built out onto it and everything, because he goes in through that. And then when he gets inside her room, I don't know how to describe this painting. There's an image of his naked daughter straddling the bathtub, and which might be fine in like the private, you know, photo album of your family stuff, right? No problem. This is like a painting or a colored pencil drawing. It's definitely not a photo.
I've never seen this. Oh my God.
And it's framed. It's framed. It's in her room. I want to know who
drew. It can't be her. It's got to be something else, right?
I mean, it's got her hair. It looks like her. But who made this picture? That's what I want to know. Did he draw it or did she draw it? And either way, that's a bad explanation.
He's been listening too much to that subversive rock and roll. That's another line that I didn't remember. Like, I've seen this thing, like, he's looking at one of her Tiger Beat magazines and he sees Boy George and he's like, I don't know why they don't call him Girl George. And Jesus. Just in the confusion, he's like, you know, and the communist shithole that I came from, they don't let us listen to rock and roll because it's too subversive. Maybe they had a point. Oof. Oof, Arnold. I bet you wish you had that line back in 2022.
Right.
But I don't know. There is weird stuff going on in the house.
There's also later in the movie when he is trying to follow Sully to the mall out of the airport, and he hijacks the Cindy's car. He rips the passenger seat out. And I honestly don't know why he does this, because in the next scenes where they're following Sully, he's just sitting in the passenger seat. Like, he's not ducked down or anything. He's just like slightly less tall than he would be.
I think the point is he literally wouldn't fit in this teeny tiny Euro sports car that she's driving.
But it's a convertible. And like, the top is down.
No, but I mean, like, the legroom. Legroom's not there.
Oh.
He couldn't fit physically into it, so he rips it out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But it is hilarious because even when doing that, it looks like he's as tall as she is. Like, you know, he's like sitting. Yeah. He's wearing the car is what he's doing.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's an accessory for him.
Like a tutu.
There's another scene where they're trying to get to this seaplane, right? And they alert the guards, and the guards come driving at them with machine guns firing. And right. I get it, man. It's probably hard to fire a machine gun from a moving vehicle and hit a person. But to not be able to hit an airplane, like not a single bullet goes through this airplane. They are shooting into the sky. They're shooting behind them. I don't know where they're shooting. I can only assume it's because the plane they rented, it would have been too expensive to actually put bullet holes into a plane.
No, the very last thing before Arnold finally takes these guys out and shuts the door, it does get 3 bullet holes.
Oh.
The very last thing.
On the door? Could they replace the door? Is that like the most affordable piece of the plane?
I wonder. That might, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, my God, they must have, because it's this absurd. It's like that Monty Python Holy Grail where Lancelot's coming from like a mile away. It's like, and the guards are looking at. It's like that, except for they're both exchanging gunfire.
Yeah.
Arnold's got this like Uzi thing that he's holding gangster style and he's spraying them down, not hitting a goddamn thing. They're coming at him. They get to like 50 feet away. And Arnold finally, just as the boat's pulling away from the dock, he kills them both and they roll into the bay or whatever. But it's, yeah, the marksmanship, not super there in that scene.
No. And then the final thing I have to say is like another continuity error type of thing. The airport that they show them flying out of is Tom Bradley International Airport. And you can see it on the signs. And apparently that is an airport in Connecticut, and they are most definitely not in Connecticut. I'm pretty sure they're in California in this movie.
Oh, yeah. They're like, I think the William Hearst Castle is what's standing in for Arias's estate.
Huh.
And okay. The reason they picked that is that it was one of the few big land places that they could film, that they would also let them build those barracks so they could explode.
Yeah. They say it's on an island near Santa Barbara. So, yeah, that would definitely be California.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's all I've got, man. What a great movie.
I also like the way he drives in this film, because every single time he gets in a car, it's just gas to the wall. Whether he's driving a sports car like a Porsche, whether he's driving a giant Cadillac, it's just this guy doesn't give a fuck about fuel consumption or rubber on tires, man.
He's got no time to waste. He's got 11 hours to save his daughter.
That's true. Yeah, I do like that. There is a clock on this operation, and it's one that makes sense, you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally. It's not arbitrary. It's very smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The
only thing about it is like,
he's dead tired.
He doesn't really know. Yeah, that's a great kill. But he doesn't really know what the situation is, right? Because Arias could be anywhere. Arias and Bennett could have, like, when they put Arnold on this plane, they could have gotten on their own plane and flown to Costa Rica. You know,
they
could be going
gamble.
11 hours in the opposite direction, and he would not be able to catch them in time. So
it's an insane gamble to bet that in 11 hours, you're going to find and locate your daughter before this guy lands and they instantly kill your daughter. Because that's the thing. Once this guy's corpse hits the ground and the guys in Valverde find out about it, Alyssa Milano's toast. And like you said, he even goes over like 30 minutes over his deadline. So,
right.
Like we'll fix that in the Rock remake.
Yeah, yeah. He'll know where they are, but it will take him all that time to get there, maybe.
You got any other random observations?
No, I think that's it.
What a way to kick off the badass season. Again, we'll be back next week with Sylvester Stallone's Over the Top.
I can't
which
wait.
Is in its own way as delightful as Commando is in the absurd. We're exploring the absurdity of the 80s badass in this series, at least so far. Please join us on our Wednesday live recording of our badass sessions. We're going to talk about the Badass Hall of Fame and we're going to be looking at a Mount Rushmore of badasses. We're going to be taking new inductees that we're going to be debating in the weeks to come. We're going to make that a podcast and release it too. But if you want to participate and join into our live discussion, check us out at twitch.tv/baldmove this Wednesday at 1 p.m. Otherwise, we'll see you as the Badass Fest 4 rolls on next week with Sly Stallone in Over the Top. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.